אז אני אדבר באנגלית היום, ויש תרגום עם שחר אחורה. So we have to remember, keep remembering the fundamental, the basis, that all Dharma practice goes in a way in the same direction, which is moving us from the sense of being on automatic pilot to being controlled by automatic habits and I would say karma, but it's such a big word. So let's leave it as habits, what we built in our life. And instead, it moves out of that automatic pilot to take responsibility, moving from a contracted place in which we are just pushed and pulled by circumstances, by events that happen in life that just push us and pull us, and we're just coping and managing and struggling with circumstances that we cannot control. Instead of that, we're in an expanded place, a place of much more freedom to dance with what we cannot, life that we cannot control, to dance and to be connected. And this is both in the mind and in the heart. And we really cannot distinguish the two. So in a way, all Dharma will work with mind and heart, because the two cannot be really separated. The word citta is mind-heart. And we should remember this, because when we have unpleasant, difficult experiences that seem to be in the mind, things, concerns that concern us, or thoughts that keep going around, or memories of something, of a woundedness that we feel that happened in our life and that keep coming up, and concerns about tomorrow or my year, or if there, im as, if this, then what will happen, what will happen. And we have to realize that much of our struggle in life is driven by the heart. The mind will be driven by the heart, the circles in the mind, the loops in the mind. It's the heart that's the engine that drives them. Like concern, worry, daga, what will be. So we're thinking, how will I do it? How will I do it? What will I do? If I do this, then that. And we forget that it's the heart that drives that worry. And so we need to pay attention to the heart. In this retreat, we are working with both. The retreat itself and the silence will make sure that we are more aware and awake of our inner life and our outside life. The retreat itself, just being here together, quietly sitting, walking, already works with the content. And so we need to allow that to happen, and to allow our heart and mind to be expanded together, larchiv, to be. So do pay attention during the day how the heart and mind together work a little differently. The eye will notice small flowers by the side of the road, and the heart, because we are working with the heart level, the heart will appreciate them and say, wow, that's a really beautiful flower. What's it saying to me, this flower? We will meet a tree, and it will not just be the shade of the tree that we need a tree. We will suddenly notice, well, this tree has a shape. It's expressing itself. It's a being. I'm there with this tree. All the people in the retreat, we meet all the time. Let us be close. Feel that we are noticing people. Maybe especially because we're not talking. And sometimes we see more because the words are just kind of separating us and not connecting us. So we see each other. We see the people who are cooking for us here. As we see others, let our heart be touched. Give a sense of the preciousness of everybody here in the retreat. As we meet each other, feel each other, sense each other. So this is where the heart and the mind are expanded and it's working by itself in the retreat. Mm-hmm. So this sense, this word expansion, harchava, is actually quite important because, as I say, the Dharma always goes there, because the opposite of it, hitkavtzut, contraction, is where we are locked in our private world of struggle. And the heart is busy with my year, what I have to do, what's the problem, what's my problem, what. So expansion is quite an important word here. And it's like the title of Sharon Salzberg's book is A Heart as Wide as the World. It's wide a heart. So we're expanding the mind and expanding the heart. Every time we walk with awareness, we are expanding the mind and also expanding the heart, being in touch. So that's an important movement, and it changes the way that we meet life. We meet life from a more expanded, free place, able to notice life, and then the heart comes in with a different language, not just language of problem and defense and fear. So that's our practice here, is we are expanding the heart and freeing up the heart. So it can be, you can say, well, you know, I meet difficulty, and to rewrite, lichtov michadash, the language of the heart, is a bit like kind of pouring perfume in the shit. Lishboch bosem betoch achara. But I think we can change that language a bit. It's actually not quite like that. My chickens, they produce a huge amount of shit. And you could say, oh, chicken shit is so smelly and horrible. It's wonderful as compost. And it goes and feeds the garden. And we take it from the chicken shed and use it for the garden. So the idea is to compost, turn the shit to compost. That's what we're doing. Not to pour, not to wipe it out and pour perfume, pretend it doesn't exist, but to be engaged with the difficulty in us, and through the difficulty can be our wounded heart, our heart that is wounded. But through the practice of metta and awareness, we compost, we turn it into compost, we turn it into, we attend to it, we relate to it, and we see it in the, with different eyes. We see ourselves with different eyes, and we see our wounds with different eyes. Now, in the tradition, the early Buddhist tradition of the suttas, this practice is purely vibrational. There is no words. So I'd just like to read how it's practiced 2,500 years ago, metta. So a monk spreads 1/4, radiates 1/4 full of loving kindness, then the 2/4, and then the 3/4, and then the 4/4, means the whole 360 degrees. And then above, and then below, and then all around, and everywhere, and then to everything, as to himself. He spreads the whole world with a mind full of loving kindness, rich, gavoa, high, immeasurable, without any negativity at all. So that's the early traditional practice. But we could experience that as too abstract. It's too theoretical. It's okay for the monks that have left their life and are totally into practice 24 hours, maybe for years. They can go to the subtle level of tether, vibration, of loving kindness, of metta. But we have a week, and we're not monks. And we're not in front of the Buddha. So that's why the phrases are a wise option to empower metta quite strongly and quite immediately. And so phrases for us are a wise option, mishpatim, a wise option, especially if we feel lost. If we feel we don't really know what we're doing, or we feel it's not working for me, or I don't really know all this language of the heart and so on, I don't know where my heart is, I don't know what I'm saying, I don't know it. You know, we can feel that, it's okay. At that time we really need the phrases. May I be happy and peaceful. May you be happy and peaceful. Just let the phrases work. Because they have a power, the phrases, as mantra. And the mantra, those of you who spend time in India know that the Indian culture, spiritual culture, really, really like mantra. And it has a lot of power. And the power of a mantra, of a sentence, is that it's not exactly in its meaning, it's in the vibration that it brings, and in the power of the language to do change. And so mantra can have a power. People, I remember once meeting a yogi in some Himalayan mountain. I don't know, I was up somewhere, walking in somewhere in the Himalayas in one of my trips to India, and there was a yogi there that was walking, and we talked, and he said, I'm not afraid of anything in the world because I have a mantra. And any time I'm threatened, I just send a mantra and it protects me and it can kill people. Okay, good for you. So the phrases have a power, and it's in the vibration that there is. It's in the change that it's not exactly the meaning. So we can actually a little bit fit the phrase to what's right for us, to what it should be in Sfat Em. So it should be in Hebrew or English if you prefer, but it should be in something that is really settles in us easily. And we can change the words a bit if we feel like that, to make it more powerful for us. We can change the words. So I also, and then we use the words, but it's good, like I said yesterday, to take breaks and touch the feeling that the words produce, because there we can acknowledge the way the heart is responding to the sentences, the mishpatim, the words. So we can actually experience the heart, we can sit and watch the heart for a moment, and just like the image of a mantra, a sentence, a mishpat, is like throwing a stone into a pond, and then we can take a small break and watch the ripples at Advot. What is happening? I throw the stone in the pond. That's the sentence. Let me just very quietly see what's changed in my heart. So we start with the self. We address, we direct the metta practice to our bodily life, to ourself. And the body is really still part of our practice here. We can't leave it behind. We do need to pay attention to the body. I remember asking a long time ago, Cambodian monk who was very old, more than 100 years old, and I asked him, "What's your practice?" He said, "Every morning I go through my body bit by bit and I ask each part, are you happy? And it's, yes, I'm happy. Right ear, are you happy? Yes, I'm happy. Left ear, are you happy? Yes, I'm happy. Nose, are you happy? Yes, I'm happy." There is metta and mindfulness together. It's connecting with us, our life, with a value or a colour of kindness. So when we look at ourselves, the mind will be full of its tasritim, its scripts, its stories, its thoughts. And here too, we need to look at the mind with different eyes and give metta to our troubled minds. And a little bit, this needs us to be confident, to have trust that it's possible to be able to be mindful of what's in the mind, otherwise we won't see what's in the mind, to be aware of what's happening, what's coming up, and to give kindness to our mind. May you be happy and peaceful. And if things are coming up for you today that are difficult, and it can be mind-body things like tiredness or restlessness or wanting to run away from the retreat, I can't take it anymore, irritation about something, oh, it's not right, and I need another petek to the menahalim, there's something is wrong, and you know, whatever, the mind does this, and a petek to the menahalim is not going to solve all our karma. So just use the practice, use it wisely, of being aware of our inner life and radiating kindness and softness and metta. May you be happy and peaceful. May you not suffer. May you be free. May you be at ease. I love you just as you are. My inner life. Or mind, body. I know it's a little subtle if we're full of some restlessness or negativity. It's not so easy, or confusion. But still, we can do it. We remember, yes, I will radiate to my complaining mind metta with phrases. And then we move to the benefactor, our person that we find easy to give metta to. And this is to help. It's not that the person needs metta. It's not that the Dalai Lama is waiting there saying, "Oof, I need more, why don't they give me metta?" It's for us. It's just to smooth the path for us to open our heart, to expand our heart. Remember, expanding. So we, in a way, take a tramp on the benefactor to expand our own heart. The benefactor, the person that we find easy to give metta to. Someone that's touching our heart, that is devoted, that is kind himself or herself, or is a teacher or a person that we want to give a gift to. And we do it through metta. And today we can begin to give metta to a friend, and bring to mind a friend that we have, a friend that we really appreciate the friendship, someone that we love to have around, and wish them to be happy. Very, very basic. It's very beautiful. Wish them to be happy. May you be happy and peaceful. May you be free. I love you just as you are. Whatever phrases that we are feel comfortable with, we now address them to a friend. And again, we can see this as healing. It's possible to see metta as healing, ripui, but we shouldn't get stuck on that thought, because then we start to measure, oh, the metta should work. The metta is for us, in a way, to heal us. What it does in the world is not in our hands, we don't know. So I would let go of the sense that metta as a mantra does things, then, and we can measure that it's making a person happy. Oh, how can you be miserable? I've been giving you metta for the last, for weeks, and you're, well, what's the matter with you? It's to purify our own heart, to expand the boundary of our heart. So today, bring to mind the imagining world, a good friend, and just use that connection that we have, which already has heart in it. So we're adding more power to the connection. We should be aware that the heart is not in our control. We are not fully in control of our heart. It doesn't necessarily do what we ask it. So we can give metta and all that comes up is atspanut. And we think, oh, the practice doesn't work. It's not working for me. I'm just atspanut and I should be giving metta. And I don't, the whole thing is something wrong with it. But we forget that the heart is not in control, in our control. The heart does what it wants. We can guide it, we can give it help to expand and to sweeten the language of the heart. We can give it some direction, but it's a wild child of ours, this heart. And it will, mishtoleo. It will go crazy, it will be sometimes irritated, it will be angry, it will maybe sad, things can happen. It's all right. We have to understand that the heart will react in its own way, but slowly, 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 the direction that we give to the heart will work. And we can see that, we can get a sign of it. I think if we, in our daily life here, when we look at people with new eyes, we look at the flowers and the plants and the ants with new eyes, we will see that there is something that is changed, but we'll allow difficulty to come up. And there is a story that I tell every metta retreat, because it just stays with me all these years, of a woman that had cancer in a retreat that we did years ago, and she was very seriously sick, and she came to the retreat with a tank of oxygen, Khamsan, and I had a dialogue with her, and she said, just what's coming up for me is just anger and anger and anger, and everything that happens is anger. I just feel so much anger about everything, about my life and about what this disease and about what happened to me and about other people in my life. But I knew this wasn't the end of the story, because I could see in her eyes there was such a gleam, a shine in her eyes. And she said, but I walked out onto the hilltop and I watched the hills of the Galilee, and my heart suddenly filled with a total unconditional love which was totally beyond me, and I know I can die happy. And she did. She died happy. And that story always touched me and stayed with me. So a final word, that we are in relationship. We are not isolated units, humans on their own. We are always in relationship. Relationship with ourselves, with the world, we are made of the world. The world and us are one thing. There is just unity and connection between us and the world. And so we need kind of to be more connected to the world. And that's where metta becomes liberating. Like in the quotation that I gave in my talk, the Buddha said, metta leads to liberation. How does it do that? That sense of expansion, our harchava, is about realizing how connected we are with the world. And what's not connecting, what's separating us from the world, are the voices of care, of concern, of daga, of fear, of separation, of worry, of withdrawal, boundaries, walls, shirion, the boundaries we put between us and the world. And the metta practice, like the wisdom practice, together reconnect us to the world, make our us realize how connected we are. And there is a place of liberation. And the world today is in trouble and needs us to be connected and to be heartful and to be kind. The world really needs it. And we have a tough gig. So thank you, and we'll take 5 or 10 minutes to practice.